First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report. NFL season starting in a couple days. I am knee deep in magazines, books, all kinds of stuff. Got my fantasy draft West Coast version going tonight. Very exciting. Although, I have to say I'm against the Thursday night game. I just wish everything started on Sunday. I don't like this whole new tradition where we have the first game on a different day than we always grew up with the first game being. It just kind of bothers me. But we'd be remiss with NFL season starting if we didn't call our favorite stat guy, the author of the 2008 Pro Football Prospectus, the creator of footballoutsiders.com, and our 2008 Democratic Party nominee, Mr. Aaron Schatz. How are you?
I'm good.
You took a lot of heat this year because are the Giant fans still rubbing your face in it or no?
Oh, I'm sure that they are, but I mean, what can you do about a historic upset? I mean, just historic proportions, except say, hey, historic upset of historic proportions.
Well, you know, one of the things you could do in your book that is available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere, you could write a whole chapter about how the Giants were the luckiest team in Super Bowl history.
Yes, indeed. And while it's not necessarily the luckiest team in Super Bowl history, it does explore sort of the truths and myths about their season and what happened to them in the playoffs. It talks about their good serendipity recovering fumbles. It talks about how the road warrior thing is a little bit of nonsense. The past teams that have a really great record on the road don't really have a good record in the playoffs. They don't necessarily have a good record on the road the next year. At the same time, the stuff about how the young players all played well is true. The young players really did play well. They had a great draft last year.
Well, what about the list you had of the top 10 teams that deviated the most from the Pythagorean formula?
Oh, yeah. Who defeated the hardest? Vince Verhey went through and looked at who defeated the hardest road on the way to winning the Super Bowl and the most unlikely based on how good they had been during the regular season, based on the Pythagorean wins, which is, just based on, it sounds more complicated than it is. It's just okay. Based on points scored and allowed.
So you had
42.
And
yeah, the Giants were like the most unlikely Super Bowl of all time by a ridiculous amount, because not only were they the weakest team to ever win the Super Bowl and one of the weakest teams to ever make it, but they also beat like the second hardest run of teams except for the 76 Raiders.
Right. Well, we had the 42 Super Bowl champions. By far, they were the most improbable. We won't use luckiest. You'll say improbable.
And the funniest thing is, when you first read that chapter in the book, you said to me, yeah, Bill, another Patriots fan like us. And the funny thing is the chapter is written by Bill Barnwell, who is actually our resident Giants fan.
Oh.
He was very happy about the result, but he also wanted to, make sure people understood what it really meant. It didn't mean the Giants were better. It only meant that they were better for one day and not by that much.
Well, what I thought was interesting was out of the 42 teams you did, five of the top 10 most improbable were from this decade.
Yeah, and it seems like we're on this thing where, wow, any team can win it once you get into the playoffs. But I'm not sure that's quite the case. I mean, the Steelers were a wild card team, but they definitely were one of the best teams in the league that year.
Yeah, they were peaking right around.
They just happened to play the other three of the four best teams on the way to winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And the Colts had a bad year for them, but they were in the middle of a string of good years, so that wasn't much of a shock. The Giants thing is a whole other thing altogether, but I don't think you're going to be seeing now a whole string of sixth seeds winning Super Bowls.
I don't know. I feel like the gloves are off. The last couple of years have just been too weird for me.
It has been pretty weird, but at the same time, I mean, the thing about the Colts is the team that you expected them to lose to, I mean, we kind of expected them to lose to the Patriots because we're Patriots fans, but in reality, the better team was San Diego. Once they made it to the Super Bowl, nobody thought they were really going to lose to Chicago. I mean, people thought I was weird just because I said it was a toss-up. So it's not like they won the Super Bowl was a huge shock that they beat Chicago. It's not like Pittsburgh, it was a huge shock that they beat Seattle. The Giants, it was a huge shock that they beat the Patriots.
Well, speaking of San Diego, one of the things I thought was interesting was you had a little thing about when 10-win teams change coaches, it's not actually as big of a deal as we might think it is sometimes. And I wish you had told me this last year when I picked San Diego to have a bad year. But,
well, we thought Turner would be a problem, too, last year. I mean, yeah. We thought they'd still win their division. But we thought he'd be a problem. And I don't think that just because they had one upset win in the playoffs that you can now ignore all of the failure that Turner had at his previous head coaching positions and say, oh, okay, it turns out he's a good head coach. They had one upset win in the playoffs with a team that's absurdly, ridiculously talented. It doesn't mean Turner's a good coach.
So you had 13 10-win teams that changed coaches since 1988. Out of those 13, only three dropped three losses or more from the previous season. And I thought it was interesting. The three coaches were Ray Hanley, Ray Rhodes, and Dennis Erickson, which coincidentally three of the worst coaches maybe in NFL history.
But I would agree with you on that.
It was interesting. Norv was not in that group. Like, you would think he belongs in that group, but he defied the odds.
They had a reasonable season last year, but I mean, I think part of the theory in there that Ned had was head coaches may not be as important as we think they are. And my response to that was, it's really hard to say that because it sure seems like head coaches in the NFL are so much more important than in other sports. But when you think about it a little bit, some of what we think of as why the great head coaches are great is actually their general manager skills, not their coaching skills, with Belichick being a good example.
Do I go on a Doc Rivers rant right now or no?
I think we saved that for a basketball show.
Yeah, because I am now of the opinion that coaching just in the NBA just does not matter.
Well, like the NFL and NBA are obviously such unbelievably different.
Well, the NBA now, yeah, in the NBA, you're now a preschool teacher. You're just in charge of the kids, and you just make sure none of them get in trouble.
So
NFL,
are you kidding? It's like the equivalent of being a special teams coach in the NFL. Okay,
I mean,
NFL coaching is way more intense, way more intricate. But there is the possibility that we have overrated it just a little bit because some of the most successful coaches of recent memory are coaches who some of the good decisions they made were related to personnel. I mean, part of what makes Belichick so great is his knowledge of personnel and the way that they're able to build their roster efficiently under the salary cap. And part of what makes Dungy so great is that he happens to have a system which allows Bill Polian, who is a great general manager, to go out and get players that are undervalued by other teams, which allows them to build a team with more depth than you would usually expect given how much money they put into their top players.
I would throw this at you. I think maybe coaches were more important 10, 15 years ago because there were less good coaches.
And
now the guys are more competent.
And because the salary cap wasn't quite as important, so it was more about coaching them up and not about, can we fit this guy in who's making the $100,000 over the minimum or whatever, you know.
Right. Teams weren't, you know, 20 years ago, teams were bringing in Bum Phillips for his third tenure when he was obviously
bad. Which is, of course, what we said when they brought back his son, and yet his son was a good coach. But then again, you know, what Wade Phillips did in his first two stops is not great, but far better than what Norv Turner did in his first couple stops.
Well, did the Cowboys win 10 games in 2006?
They did, right? Were 9-7, I believe.
Oh, so they don't count for that graphic.
No.
You know what doesn't help Wade's cause is Hard Knocks. If I was a coach, I would not go on Hard Knocks unless I was a compelling, captivating person.
Well, but the thing is, it's not real. I mean, Stefan Fatsis wrote this week, I think it's Slate, about how, you know, he's been in a camp. And it's the most real that we've ever seen of training camp, but it's also far from real. And things are clearly kind of staged, and the players know they're on camera. It's not the real, you know, getting into it and swearing and stuff, a real training camp.
Well, they did have I think it was episode 3. Or maybe it was episode 4 where they had that whole sequence they showed of Bobby Carpenter just getting worked over by the Dallas offensive line. Did you see that?
No, I haven't.
It was excellent. They were F-bombing him. They were threatening to punch him in the face. Like, it was very candid for Hard Knocks.
Hasn't really worked out, has he?
No, has not worked out. And you could kind of see it from this little 4-minute sequence when he was getting shoved around like Ralph Macchio.
But, and it's surprising. You don't think of Ohio State linebackers as guys who don't perform in the NFL as opposed to, say, University of Florida wide receivers.
Well, the other interesting part of that episode was the Gene Upshaw thing happened. And they had a really cool moment with Wade Phillips where he found out and he's like struggling not to start crying and he's on camera and it was kind of awkward but weird and genuine and it was neat. It's a neat show. I mean, it never disappoints, in my opinion. Let's talk about a couple other things. One of my favorite things in the book was the study of Just because it was so over the top. The study of college running backs with high carries.
My man Bill Barnwell did that one, yeah. Of high carries. Oh, I thought you were talking about the speed score thing at the end, which is also really cool.
Well, we'll get to that too. But
40 time and how 40 time actually at the combine does matter if you adjust it for weight. The one about carries in college is mine. That's been my hobby horse since I started Football Outsiders 5 years ago.
Right.
I mean, the one thing that actually coaches have talked about in the NFL with the media is the curse of 370. It's like my most popular idea. And here you've got a guy who was handed the ball, Kevin Smith, University of Central Florida gives him the ball 450 times in one season. Are you kidding me?
With 10 games, 11 games?
Yeah, I mean, they're killing that guy. I mean, there's no question it's different. You're talking about more spread, so there's bigger holes. The guys hitting him are smaller. They're not NFL quality. 35 or whatever of the carries came after a month off because they're in a bowl game, but still, it's ridiculous. And when you go back and you look at college running backs with lots of carries, a lot of them turned out to be really successful in the NFL. But the ones who did were all first-round picks, except Herschel Walker, who's a special case anyway.
I thought that was very interesting, and it did not bode well for the Ray Rice era.
It doesn't bode well for the Ray Rice era, it doesn't bode well for the Matt Forte era, and it does not bode well for this sudden Chris Perry era in Cincinnati.
Yeah, he's on my East Coast fantasy team, so I don't know why I'm laughing.
I will be shocked if he stays healthy the whole year.
He probably won't. I'm hoping for 2 good weeks, and then I'm going to unload him as fast as I can.
I like Kenny Watson. I think he's a talented guy.
You also tested out my Joe Gibbs speed limit theory, which I was very excited about.
We did test out your Joe Gibbs speed limit theory, discovered that it is somewhat accurate, except that the actual age of decline is not 55, which unfortunately means that it's not as catchy.
No, 57, although, you know, if I had known it was 57, I could have done Heinz Ketchup.
That's what I said. I said, this is only catchy if the oldest coach in the league is in Pittsburgh.
True. The 57 Heinz thing, it's not terrible. I mean, it's not as much fun as the speed limit, but
True. I mean, head coaches do get too old. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean the Patriots need to get rid of Belichick now that he's 56. But I think when you bring a guy back for that second and third run, you don't want to bring guys back that are over that age.
For me, it was a common sense thing. I just don't think that somebody has the energy to do a job that, you know, these guys are spending 18 to 20 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
During the season. And I just, you know, I look at my dad, who's 60 years old, and I just don't see him being able to do that.
It's absurd. It's absurd. And it's all management now. It's really not as much about coaching. You know, Jim Schwartz from the Titans, people know I'm friends with, the defensive coordinator, he said to me, listen, being a coordinator now in the NFL is like being what a head coach was 15 years ago. That's how much work it is. And being a head coach is another different thing entirely. It's like a whole new level of work. But it's also mostly management. A lot of the real intricacies are controlled by the coordinators, but there's just so many hours of overall management put in as a head coach. So if you're a guy like Gibbs, who, I mean, for Gibbs, a lot of it always originally was that he had a great offensive mind. Well, he's not now the one calling the plays. They brought in Al Saunders to do that.
Yep. Well, for me, the tipping point was Spurrier. When he was putting in the 8-hour workdays, and the Redskins were just awful.
Oh, what, as opposed to, like, John Gruden sleeping in his office? Yeah,
it was just like, yeah, all right, now we've moved out of the 70s. Like, officially, somebody cannot put in an 8-hour workday as a head coach and succeed.
Yeah,
it's,
you know,
just
it's
not
like
going to happen.
They're not going to be any more player managers.
No. The other thing I thought was cool that you guys tested out was, yeah, looking with Michael Turner as the obvious test case this season, but guys who have been part-time running backs for either 1 year or multiple years and how that translates to when they finally get the job. And really, Charlie Garner was the only success story for guys who've had multiple high yard per carry but haven't gotten that many carries.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of guys that have, like, one good season,
like
Barry Foster. And, you know, but Priest Holmes obviously is a very, very, very special case. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, most of those guys did not turn out. Plus, as we point out in the Atlanta chapter of the book, the Falcons went out and signed a guy whose claim to fame is that he's almost as good as the guy they already had, Jarius Norwood.
Right.
I mean, obviously different styles of runners, different sizes. But Norwood has been so good his first 2 years that it just doesn't really – I mean, to make Turner the starter – for all that money, despite how well he's played in San Diego, it doesn't really seem to quite make sense, You're talking about an offensive line that Warrick Dunn was able to get 3.2 yards per carry behind, and Norwood got 6.
Norwood was great unless he was on your fantasy team.
Well, because of the horrible world of running back by committee that is a curse upon fantasy owners everywhere, where Norwood probably had 2 good weeks all year because usually they were giving him the ball 5 times for 27 yards and no touchdowns, which is, you know, good play, you know, per play performance, but it ain't helping your fantasy team any.
Well, Holmgren's taking it up a notch from Shanahan this year. Shanahan, you know, has had the 2 guys. Holmgren this year has like 7 guys.
I know.
And each guy's going to get two carries a game. I hate him.
Houston's pretty bad too, though.
I don't even know who's starting for them.
Pretty bad because, I mean, I know that I'm a little out there, but I'm predicting them to make the playoffs. If people have seen the latest ESPN, the magazine, there's actually a cover story which is kind of finding the it team that I wrote, and we came up with Houston. We put Mario Williams on the cover of the magazine. So whoever is the running back there is going to get, I think, good yardage. Alex Gibbs is now the offensive line coach. The problem is, who's the running back? Chris Brown went on IR, but they still got, like, the corpse of Amon Green. They have Steve Slayton. They have Chris Taylor, who people are trying to, like, pretend has got some unhidden Willie Parker talent or something. Darius Walker's on the practice squad. Marcel Schiff is still around, I think. I mean, it's just a... It's got to be Slayton, I would think.
All right, I have 2 counters for you. First of all, I think too many people are on the Texans bandwagon. That scares me.
There's a lot of people on the Texans bandwagon. I thought I was like the only one.
No, but if you're looking at it for the it team, they're really one of the only logical choices. It's a slim pickings this year for the crappy team that jumps.
All the teams that we have in the playoffs that weren't in the playoffs last year are basically 8-8 teams, with the exception of the one that people think I'm really out there on, which is Baltimore. And of course, when I say I think Baltimore is a playoff team, I mean at 9-7. I don't mean at 13-3.
Well, I'm probably going to pick the Jets for that same thing. I think the Jets
aren't a bad pick. Jets aren't a bad pick for that.
The Ravens
especially
are intriguing.
Playing the Western divisions, that the AFC East plays the Western divisions, which are still weak except Seattle and San Diego.
The Ravens intrigue me because they finally got rid of Billick, and anybody who comes in might just be worth.
You just have to expect the defense to bounce back.
Yeah.
And I realize, you know, that my reasons for believing that their offense can be a little better are all mathematical. But there are a lot of really strong mathematical trends in their favor, like the fact that they only recovered 5 out of 25 of their own fumbles last year.
And each
one of those turnovers that was, you know, somewhat bad luck is a drive killed.
You love fumble recoveries.
Love fumble recovery. It's a really good way to look for teams that are going to turn things around.
Or it's a really good way to punch yourself in the face as you're watching Super Bowl 42.
Yes, and once again, I mean, I realize people say, oh, Patriots homer, but no. Super Bowl 42 was essentially tied. The difference in the game was fumble recovery, which is why to this day I do not understand why Belichick did not challenge the fumble recovery on the, what was it, Ahmad Bradshaw fumble that Pierre Woods seemed to have.
I think at that point,
or may have been down.
At that point, he was crapping in his pants. I think everybody was just so overwhelmed by what was happening that
it was fairly early. I thought it was early second quarter.
It was the second quarter, right? Yeah, but the Giants were kind of. Everybody just thought the Pats were going to roll out there and just, you know, it was going to be 14-0 after 10 minutes, and then it became obvious that the Giants D line had other ideas. And so I think it was right in the middle of that when that happened. I think Belichick, you know, he's trying to figure out why Matt Light can't block anybody.
No kidding. It was essentially a tie, but in the NFL, you don't have ties in the Super Bowl game. Giants, you know, made that one last play, and they won the game.
Back to Houston for a second, because I did take a long, long, long look at them. The running back thing, I don't know if that's a problem anymore in 2008.
No, think about Green Bay last year. It's not a problem at all.
Yeah, I mean, or Ahmad Bradshaw. Like, these guys come out of nowhere, you don't know who the hell they are, and all of a sudden they're rushing for 100
yards. Honestly, I feel like there's like 6 running backs that are really special, and everyone else is interchangeable.
Yeah, and if that is their biggest hole, then that's, you know, not a bad hole. Like, but if Tavares Jackson is your biggest hole, we're in a whole other ballgame,
right.
I feel like.
Their other problem is that their offensive line, while it's been getting better, and they now have Alex Gibbs as head coach, they have a rookie left tackle.
Hmm. Well, and they also have the Shaub, Andre Johnson... Just 2 fluky injuries last year.
There's one receiver on that team.
Right. Yeah. They're interesting, though. I think they're interesting. The Jets, you know, the Ravens. Then you go in the NFC, it gets a little tougher.
Oh, yeah. I think there's 6 teams that will be in it for the wild cards in the NFC.
Yeah, and we really could see an 8-8 wild card, potentially.
Yeah, and I realize we're very different from everyone else in our opinion of Dallas because, you know, the trends, the same reason why we were down on them last year, and we were wrong last year, and it's possible we're wrong this year. There's just something we're missing about them, but a lot of it is health. They just have been so healthy the last few years. The only injuries they've had have been, like, season-long ones, but they haven't had those nagging injuries where guys are listed as questionable for 5 weeks straight. It's likely they're going to have an average number of injuries, which means they're going to have to go to their depth somewhat, and we've never seen them do that. It's already started. Two receivers are out, and the guard, Kyle Kozier.
But as you pointed out in the book, maybe it's not an aberration.
Maybe it's not.
The dude who's
know.
In charge of injuries.
We
What's his
know.
Name? Jim Jurasik?
At this point, with Umanyora gone, I'm picking the Cowboys as the second wild card now instead of the Giants.
But what was the guy? Who was the guy in charge who you thought the strength coach or something was might be responsible?
I don't remember the name.
Low.
But, yeah, the guy there has been with a lot of those Parcells teams.
Because I wonder if it's like the Phoenix Suns in the NBA, where somebody is onto something medically and nobody else can figure out what they're doing.
Whatever it is, will they call up the Colts and Patriots and tell them? Because those two teams, for all of their greatness, like, have got to be the worst teams ever when it comes to rehabbing their guys through injuries.
I love downing the Colts in any possible way I can, but even I have to admit, they got racked last year. That was ridiculous.
Oh, and this year already. Look at with the Lilja and Saturday. And let's be honest, Freeney, nobody knows how much, you know, burst he'll have off the edge right away. Mm. And nobody is sure that Manning is all right. And nobody's sure that Marvin Harrison is all right. And Tywon Hagler is out. And, I mean, it's ridiculous how that team can't stay healthy. There's got to be something wrong with it in the training room.
Well, when you say Marvin Harrison might not be all right, do you mean legally?
No, I don't mean legally. Because
okay.
every God, it's very strange. Didn't we all just completely forget that?
Like, I don't get it. I mentioned the podcast last week. And
I worry more about injuries because, I mean, legal stuff is not really my jurisdiction. And injuries aren't either, but at least that's football talk. And after what happened last year with Harrison, you honestly can't believe anything the Colts say about any injuries at any time.
Well, what do you think about Peyton Manning? I mean, we're almost at the point.
I grabbed him in my auction league. I got him for $14 less than Brady. I thought it was a steal.
Well, I'm not even talking about health, no health. Aren't we at the point where he should start to decline a little bit?
I'd say another year or two.
Have you guys ever done a study on that?
Yeah, like, 32 is around the peak age. Quarterbacks start to decline after 32, and I think he's 32.
Because I remember
Marino. And decline for him, he's still going to be one of the two best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, but a decline is also a difference of maybe 400 or 500 yards, 8 to 10 picks.
It'll happen slowly. I mean, what happens is, and with quarterback, this is bigger than any other position. Your physical skills start to go around the same time as everyone else's, around 28. I'm talking on average here, obviously. Different players are different. But because there's so much knowledge required for quarterback, that makes up for your losing physical skills until you hit around 33, and then it doesn't make up for it anymore because there's a limit to how much you can learn, and that's when guys start to decline on average.
Well, as a Patriots fan, I'm sure you remember the glorious season when Dan Marino suddenly couldn't move anymore. And he still had the zip, and he was still, everything was there, but all of a sudden he couldn't just step away and make that one guy miss.
It could be this year.
Wait, so what do you think of with Favre?
Well, I'm thinking with Favre that people forget that prior to last year, for 2 years, he was only a slightly above average quarterback. I used to actually have to defend him to people who said he wasn't any good anymore. Now people are acting like he's going to be the savior, as if what happened last year is guaranteed to happen again with a completely different team, with a different line, and different receivers, and a different running game. Now they have two good starting receivers, but they don't have the receiving depth the Green Bay had.
Well, if I could play devil's advocate, what if he gives them a C+? Would you be happy with a C+ from him?
Oh, it would be better than what they had before, no doubt.
Yeah,
it absolutely turns them from maybe kind of wild card contenders to probably wild card contenders.
Yeah, because I feel like they probably got a D- or a D from the QB last year.
But so they should not expect him. Last year he was an A. They should not expect an A.
He was an A-.
He was an A until the last throw of the year.
The playoffs, not an A.
Look at Steve McNair, okay, and Rich Gannon, too. Old guys go suddenly.
They do. But on the flip side, they had nothing. So
had nothing.
If he can give them even a little.
I mean, I still think Clemens had some promise, but they weren't willing to wait it out. I feel the same way about Leinart. I feel Leinart has promise, and the Cardinals are just not willing to wait it out.
The Jets weren't, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Jets and the Cardinals because those were two teams that the last 8-9 games of the season actually played pretty well. And if you're looking at teams that might make the jump from not being in the playoffs to being in the playoffs. So I think that's one of the criteria that I like
right,
to look
at. Right, but one thing I will caution is look at how they played, not just their wins and losses. Because otherwise you end up with, like, the Dolphins from a couple years ago who won six in a row at the end of the year, but they were all, like, three-point wins over bad teams. Everybody thought Nick Saban was a genius, and then they crashed, and Nick Saban got on the truck to Alabama.
Well, I looked at the Jets. I don't remember what their record was, but I just noticed that they were in 10 of their last 11 games.
They're funny. They're like Brett Saberhagen of football.
Yeah.
Have you noticed the way this decade, they go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth? Points to anybody who has pro football perspective to figure out what band our quote comes from in the Jets box. But they can't have too good or too bad seasons in a row, so I'm sure they'll go 9-7.
Have you guys ever come up with a way to test, like, kind of like a VORP thing, but with, like, you look at, like, somebody like Tavares Jackson. If the Vikings could just get average production at that spot.
Problem is that we're not yet at the point where we can fully separate an individual skill player's performance from his teammates and the scheme and the coaching. And therefore, I'm uncomfortable doing that. Because if you were to sub in for Tavares Jackson, let's say Chad Pennington, you wouldn't be subbing in Chad Pennington. You'd be subbing in Chad Pennington in the Jets system with the Jets receivers. And so it's not necessarily a one-to-one swap of looking at how much better one player is than another. I mean, to give the best example, Kenton Keith last year was one of the best running backs in the league on a per-play basis. He's out of work now. So teammates and scheme matter a lot, even in our individual stats.
So statistically, there's no way to do it.
No, statistically, we are not yet at the point where we can do it. That doesn't mean there's no way to do it. It just means we're not yet there.
Well, what if you graded every quarterback? So you give Tavares a D- or an F.
Like I've said with a lot of things, what we need is NFL coaches film. And frankly, some guys who can scout better than I can.
Well, you could do it subjectively and just grade each guy and then try to figure out what the higher grade would have been.
Which would still be better if we had guys who could scout better than I can.
What about, have you ever tried to figure out schedule variants? Because I look at Cleveland's schedule this year. They start out with a Sunday night game. They play a Thursday game. They have three Monday night games.
So far, we haven't found any indication that that means anything.
So nothing one way or the other.
But I'm not shutting out the idea that it could mean something. We've just never found evidence that it does. One thing we did find is that teams that have to cross three time zones for a road game, their record is no different from teams that have road games in their own time zone. That stuff about how tired you get when you fly from Foxborough to San Diego or from San Francisco to Tampa or something, it's just not true.
So when the Pats play at San Francisco and at San Diego back-to-back weeks 5 and 6, you're not worried?
Well, first of all, they're probably going to stay in California for the week.
Right.
And, I mean, I'm worried because San Diego is a really good team, and they'll have the home field advantage. But that game is no different than if San Diego happened to have, in the off season, moved to Providence.
So the Pats play 4 West Coast teams on the road this year, and you're not worried about that?
Oh, no. In fact, it's good because the West Coast teams primarily stink, except for San Diego and Seattle, and I'd say that Denver and probably Arizona are, like, average.
All right. So what's your prediction for the Pats this year?
Oh, like 13-3. Their schedule is so easy. It's not really fair to everyone else.
It's embarrassing. It's like one of those cold schedules from 2005.
It's just the way things worked out. It worked out that they happened to play the two Western divisions.
Yep.
When the two Western divisions are even worse than they usually are, and when their own division is not in really great shape, and they're coming off an unbelievable year. I mean, it's so easy. It's just really not fair to everyone else.
I don't remember the divisions being this lopsided before. Like, that division with Jacksonville and Indianapolis in it is a nightmare.
The other thing is, I remember there being good divisions and bad divisions, but often a bad division was like when you'd have times in the NFC Central where it just seemed like every team was 8-8.
Right.
You wouldn't have what you have now, which is, I mean, Denver, if things put it together, they could be like 8-8 or something. Maybe they'll even make the playoffs, but for the most part, that's one good team, one kind of okay team, and two teams that are terrible, although at least Kansas City knows where they're going.
Well, the NFC West is the same thing.
Yeah, the NFC West is the exact same thing.
And then even the NFC South, unless you talk yourself into Carolina, which
we like Tampa. We like Tampa, but it's, yeah, Tampa's good, but they don't really give off that air of Super Bowl contender. They give off that air of team that loses in the second round.
They always do well in your system for some reason.
Yeah, and they do well again this year. We're picking them to be division champs, but it just doesn't feel like they have what they have to be. They have what they need to be transcendent.
And Philly always does well in your system.
Yes, and they do again this year. We're picking them to win their division.
I think you should come up with a name for those type of teams that are just F.O. sexy.
We do. We call them the Philadelphia Eagles.
Every year, you love them.
You know, the funny thing is, the teams, our team, West Coast offense, man, they're all, I was at the Combine in Indy, and I was walking down the street, coming the other way on the street, were Reed, Holmgren, Gruden, and, like, their agent. It's like the three teams that our system always likes.
So you should hire the agent. Well, what happens if the Eagles bring in Kevin Coab, who's, like, your favorite quarterback ever coming out of college randomly?
Part of the problem is that there's a psychodrama around that quarterback situation that our statistics cannot account for.
Which is?
All the weird Philadelphia, we hate our stars business, and do they want Donovan or not, and what happens if he has a minor injury and then Cobb replaces him, and then you have a controversy. You know, it's the usual Philadelphia nonsense.
You mean, like, as evidenced by the fact that they've been constantly booing the 2007 MVP during a playoff race?
Yeah, or like they booed Mike Schmidt or, you know, yeah. Iverson or whatever.
They'll defend themselves, though.
I know. That's just Philly, man.
They're like Boston was in 2000.
They need the wins, though. They need that thing. They need, like, when the Red Sox and Patriots won, and it transformed this area. Philly needs that badly. I would love to see Philly win a championship. Those people deserve it so badly.
Well, that's what I was saying. Remember how bitter everybody was when we had the parade for Ray Bourque because he won us in the Cup?
Right.
You throw in road rage, and that's the Philly fans, like, for the last 20 years.
Yeah, basically. I really, in every sport, if the Boston team can't win, I want the Philly team to win. Those guys deserve a title. They deserve, like, three titles.
All right, give us three predictions, one fantasy, two NFL.
Fantasy-wise, by the end of the year, Rashard Mendenhall will be worth more points than Willie Parker.
Oh, I like the way you think. What about this Chris Johnson guy?
Oh, love him. Love him. They're going to split him out sometimes, Reggie Bush-like, and use him and White on the field at the same time.
It just seems like common sense that the guy who ran the 4.240 in the combines is going to play over the guy who is 35 pounds over his listed weight right now.
On the other hand, it doesn't make a lot of sense that you use three straight first or second round picks on running backs. I mean, it's like they've already admitted that the Chris Henry pick last year was a massive error.
But I like that, though. At least they admitted it.
Yeah.
At least they said, hey.
And Johnson's a guy who you can, it doesn't make White useless. That's a good team there. That's a good running back.
Yeah.
I don't mean Tennessee's a good team. I think their defense is going to come back to the pack. But that's a good running back tandem.
Well, it'd also be interesting to see what the effects are on Vince Young if he actually has a, you know, running game every
Yeah, week. We're still waiting on Vince Young to, like, you know, get it.
All right, two NFL predictions.
Baltimore to win their division. Because of defense, I'm not saying the offense will be good.
Is that a pick for Baltimore or against Pittsburgh?
Both. Okay. And against Cleveland.
I'm not sold on Cleveland.
That it's going to be a mediocre division, and I think Baltimore will escape with defense.
And what's the other one?
I'll go out on a limb here. Green Bay to make the Super Bowl even without Brett Favre.
Wow. See, I have to...
I got to give love to Campman. I got to give it to Hawk, to Barnett.
Dude, great defense.
Jenkins, I got to give it to Greg Jennings and Donald Driver. Those guys, that's a good team. The biggest danger for them, other than Aaron Rodgers is not average, Aaron Rodgers is horrible, that's the biggest danger. The second biggest danger is Al Harris doesn't rebound and Charles Woodson suddenly gets old because they don't have a lot of depth at corner. But other than those positions, the rest of their roster is so solid.
I have to figure out if Brett Favre is eligible for the Ewing theory or not, because usually if you've won a championship, that makes you permanently ineligible, but there's been such a media bias with him.
And he hasn't won a championship in a long time.
And he hasn't won a championship since we were in, like, our early 20s, so, or mid-20s, whatever. So I almost feel like enough time has passed that maybe he is eligible now for the Ewing theory. And also, everybody's kind of discounted them because everyone just assumes that this whole Favre thing and the Aaron Rodgers and that's going to screw them up and that's that.
Yes, quarterback is an important position. Yes, they would probably be better off this year if they had Favre instead of Rodgers. But that team has so much talent up and down the roster that unless Rodgers is just really bad, they'll be really good.
Yeah, I wish they weren't starting on a Monday night. I wish they had, like, some sort of unassuming 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon game in Kansas City.
It would be good for his stress level. Is that what you're saying?
I wish he was doing a game that had, like, Ron Pitts announcing it.
Do you don't feel the same way about Jamarcus Russell? I wish Jamarcus Russell didn't have to start on a Monday night.
Was that last year?
No, this year, the doubleheader.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the doubleheader.
Yeah, but
nobody watches the second doubleheader game.
I will be.
Who is it, Raiders and who?
Raiders and Broncos.
Do we know who the announcers are?
I don't think it's Mike and Mike again, but I'm not sure. And, of course, we're on ESPN, so somebody should know, but I don't happen to be that person.
You know, they haven't asked me.
Yeah, it would be cool. Why don't you and I go do a game?
People would probably turn it off.
We need a play-by-play guy. We need a play-by-play guy. It would need to be like a Week 17, like Atlanta versus Oakland or something.
All right. Any big wrinkles for your site this year?
Well, other than the big deal with ESPN, where we're going to have a lot of columns on ESPN this year, which people should look for in the NFL section, we're adding more college football content. A guy by the name of Bill Connolly, who wrote a column called Beyond the Box Score for Sunday Morning Quarterback, and he'll be writing a column for us called Varsity Numbers. We're expanding our premium section with Picks Against the Spread, and we've got a redesign that's late, but it should be out there in a couple of weeks that'll make our site look super-duper snazzy.
Picks Against the Spread? Why don't you just hire my wife? She was like 25 games over 500 last year.
Oh, God, my spreadsheet versus your wife, man. It's a battle of the death.
My wife's like the modern-day Jimmy the Greek. It's crazy.
Either that or Rain Man.
All right, we'll have you on during the season, obviously. But until then, good luck with the site redesign and your computer problems and all that stuff.
Yes, and good luck with beating your wife at picks eventually.
I need more than luck. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Target to set off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.